Hello, everybody, and welcome to Bad End, episode 19. This is a video game podcast where we talk about video games most of the time, but sometimes we talk about other things that we're doing in life. I'm Kyle Cookstell. I used to be a games writer, then they kicked me out for my takes, and now I just make video games.
His takes were too spicy, just
they
too,
were
too hot.
Too
they were
spicy.
Too spicy. It was like if you went to Chick-fil-A and got a spicy chicken sandwich, but they put double spicy in there.
Whew.
Those are my takes.
I try to think of like...
Is Chick-fil-A spicy? I feel
you
like that's
spicy,
not,
you
that
get
is not what I think
spicy chicken sandwich?
Why is that the first thing you think of when
it's spicy?
So spicy,
so like, spicy like, you had to have like two things of mayonnaise on it.
I mean, ew. What? You're not putting that Chick-fil-A sauce on there? Just straight mayonnaise?
Not on the
that
chicken
like a
sandwich.
Crime.
No,
what?
You gotta put the mayonnaise on the sandwich.
Okay.
No, you need a Chick-fil-A sauce. It's like aioli still. It's mayonnaise-based, but you don't do straight mayonnaise on there.
You gotta
like,
do
what
the
are
mayonnaise.
You, doing?
You gotta temper the spicy. There wasn't enough
Dude,
mayonnaise for how spicy my takes
what
were.
What the hell is going on? This is an awful start.
I mean, that was already a spicy take right there, Kyle. So we got a taste of what you were working with when you were writing.
You see why
God
they couldn't
forbid.
Have me.
Yeah. Too spicy. My name's Josh Calixto. I write for Kotaku.com. Have written for Rolling Stone, you might know it.com. I too have hot takes. I try to think of like the hottest take I could possibly think of, and I was like, Ocarina of Time is not a great game, but I don't actually believe that, and B, Katie actually does believe that. So
it's because I've tried playing that game so many times and I get bored every time.
Oh my god. I
don't know what it is.
See what I'm dealing with here, folks? See what I'm dealing with here?
Every day we have to have a podcast with this person.
It
doesn't
what happens
Ocarina
is
of Time
when you
is
hang
the best
out
game.
With enough writers, you just get used to hearing just the craziest fucking takes of all time. Like,
oh, we should have had Chris, Chris Bro. I can't pronounce
Bro.
Bro. Is it
Chris
I
Mario
like
Bro?
Okay,
Chris
Bro.
There's no good console Mario Bro.
Yeah,
there's no good
no,
3D Mario.
3D Marios.
Just nothing
oh, yeah.
is sacred.
I need to
Scorched
introduce myself,
earth.
Guys.
Oh yeah, sorry.
Who's this other person talking
we have
on this
a
podcast?
Third.
Hi, sorry. I'm not a ghost speaking in the microphone. I'm Katie McCarthy, writer from usgamer.net, former freelancer, former writer everywhere type thing. And that's me.
Illustrious writer, I would say.
Illustrious.
That's
I tried
a,
to
that's
Google
a big
other,
word.
I try to Google other writers and Katie's writing comes up. It's like she's everywhere.
Yeah. I typed in Gia Tolentino today and Katie
and
McCarthy
Katie came
article
up, and I was like,
came up. That was the first thing.
It's like, why is Katie on the mass
That's
head
insulting
of
the Gia. Please don't compare me. She's like the greatest living writer, in my opinion. I'm that's a big claim. She writes for the New Yorker, formerly Jezebel, formerly was she with the Hairpin? I feel like she was with the Hairpin.
She's the All Hairpin?
Yeah.
We should get Gia.
Rest
on this
in
podcast.
Peace, the All.
Great
by
author.
The All.
Great author.
Yeah. Gia's my favorite writer. She's great.
She has a great interview that just came out. You should check that out. But
I want to say something first.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, do you have something important to say? Because I was going to say something.
Oh, I was going to say rest important. In peace to the All because that closed down last week, I think.
R.I.P.
And the Hairpin. Or they are announced. I think they're closing by the end of the month. Very sad. Those are, or the All especially is one of my favorite blogs. I would blow it up every morning. I'd read it. I really loved their weather takes, like they would talk about
the
weather.
Talk about the New York sky. They're like,
yeah,
the sky.
It was like
four
very,
stars.
They're very like, yeah, they would like rate the weather every day, or review it, and it would be like literally like a little mini review. And I don't know, it was just like a lot of fun writing on there, a lot of good interviews over the years, and it's really sad to see it go. Kind of like how the Toast went like a few years ago, and that like really bummed me out. Like those were kind of like my two favorite bloggy type sites to read, and now they're just gone.
We'll have to
like,
see
so
it
sad.
Temporarily revive because of like some Hillary Clinton political ad or some shit.
She's like,
the
I'm
zombie
back the all.
Of the All.
The Toast is back.
Yeah.
What was your favorite? I have my well, I'll say mine, and you guys tell me yours. My favorite All piece was. There was one piece on the All that was called How to Cook a Fucking Steak. And it was just like,
oh my God, I remember
you get
this.
The
yeah.
fucking steak out, you put it on the fucking plate, and you put some fucking salt on it, just put it on there for fucking 4 minutes. And then that post was so popular, they made another post that was called How to Fuck a Cooking Steak. And it was about seducing a piece of meat and taking it to bed. And it's that kind of humor that I'm going to miss on the internet because the All is gone.
Yeah, I feel like I see that sort of sillier writing in some of like the AV Club's like newsy type stuff. Like Clay Purdom used to be with Killscreen. I feel like he writes a lot of fun like newsy type stuff with that similar all voice, I guess, of just like kind of like no bullshit, I'm just gonna make fun of shit. And like Deadspin obviously has like a very snarky attitude.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I feel like that sort of personality driven writing is almost dying, and it's very sad because I feel like that's what I grew up on, and that's like what I feel like shaped me as a writer. And it's just sad to see one by one these publications just be like fucking shot down, probably because they don't get clicks, because like it's only me, I'm the one viewer or reader every month or something.
They can't make the memes.
Yeah,
the pivot's just not gonna work for them.
You gotta say Feels Good Man a lot more if you want the clicks these days. Jebaited, it's a good one. Was watching a lot of AGDQ.
Nice.
And
yeah.
They say that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Bless RNG.
I just
want to
make a website where every single article's deck is just RNG.
Okay.
Every just says RNG.
Hold on, guys. I just want to real quick. We're 7 minutes into the podcast. We haven't even given a hint of what is up to come in this episode. And I just want to say to everyone listening right now, stick around, because later on in the episode, we have a very special occasion happening. I opened my mailbox the other day, right? I barely ever get any mail. What do I see but a fucking review copy from Rockstar Gaming, a New York-based company. It's got a fucking Red Dead Redemption 2 in it. So we all played through that. I streamed to Kyle and Katie, and then we all like sort of talked through it together. So we're going to be reviewing that a little bit
later.
It's
5 hours long.
Yes, that's going to be the second half of the episode, so make sure you stick around for that. But in the meantime,
I think we're the first ones to get it. I don't know.
It's embargoed for everyone else except us, Bad End mm-hmm. Podcast, the show. Mm-hmm. They wrote that in their little in the memo they sent. So I don't know what would have driven them to do such a thing, but I'm really excited. I think it's a great game. I think you guys are really going to love what we have to say about it. And we'll get there in the second half. But for now, let's take a step back, because I want to talk a little bit about AGDQ, because I watched that. Did you guys watch any AGDQ by any chance?
I actually have been watching a lot of it. I've been like catching up. I finished the Breath of the Wild one the other day. I just started watching the Super Mario Sunshine one. That game fucking sucks. That's such
wow,
a bad
God,
game.
You're full of bad
God.
Takes. So
that
many
game's
bad
so
takes
bad. That game, and I've just spent the past few weeks watching Giant Bomb East play it too, and just like, man, it's bad if you speed run it, if you slow run it. That game just sucks. I feel like world design wise, it's probably one of like the most exciting Marios. Like I really love like the concept of it. It has such a cool concept, and mm-hmm. it's so cute. Like Delfino is just like, it's just such a cute area. Like, but man, that game, just playing it, looks really bad.
Did you
like? Oof.
Did you guys see the Titanic one?
Mm-mm.
No.
They did an awful games block, right? Where it's like just the worst games out there, and one of them was like this fucking bootleg game taken off of like a Chinese cart called like the
nice.
Happy New Year 1997 cart 20-in-1, and one of the games was called Titanic, and it's a bootleg of the James Cameron film Titanic. Like, it stars stars Jack and Rose in it.
Oh, love those characters in Titanic.
And the villain is Carl, I guess. But it's a beat 'em up. It's a side-scrolling beat 'em up.
What?
Yeah, it's a total trip. And like, this game is so janky, dude. Like,
that sounds dope. Now I need to hunt this down.
It's like a 10-minute speedrun. You got to see it. But one of the things is, every time you punch, the animation will cancel anything else that's happening. So if you get killed and you punch, it'll cancel the death animation, so you can't die in the game if you punch when you get knocked out. So
it sounds like a very obvious speedrun.
Oh yeah, it's a completely obvious.
This is like run. This is my thing with the speedrunning stuff. It's like I love the idea of speedrunning and concept. I think I've talked about it as much, but then you actually watch the events, and it's like, it's not like every game has an Ocarina of Time community behind it. A lot of them are like, oh, I found this one game and nobody else is playing it, and I, like, did the run, and they'll, like, do the thing, and then it'll, like, I don't know, for whatever, like, they'll stick or not stick. So it's always so weird to watch them because it's not like there's like the high bar for like what it means to have a good run. So different games approach it differently. And a lot of times when people are playing games, it's just like, I played it really fast, which is like less interesting than some of the other stuff, like the Ocarina of Time run, where you're actually like doing, it's a mixture of like performance and like mastery that kind of transcends like the game's rules. Whereas the runs, it's just like, oh, I'm doing it fast, kind of, is like, eh.
I mean, the thing about this game is, and I think most of the awful games block, is that you're kind of looking at these very obscure games, right? Where you're figuring out these systems, diving into these games deeper than anyone has or probably should. The games probably aren't even worth the amount of time that it takes to learn how to speedrun these things. But it's like this appreciation for the systems and the way that a game is programmed and the way it's built and the way it works. And even if it's not that complex, this speedrun is like 10 minutes long and it's really funny. It's the way they do it is charming. I saw this other run of this game called like A Dog's Life or something like that. It's like a PS2 game where you control a dog and you have to like collect bones, except they are able to skip to like the loading part that's like beyond where you'd have to give the person your bones. So they could just skip through basically the entire game. And like the extent to which people have mastered A Dog's Life for PS2, which has some of the absolute most ridiculous cutscenes and content of it out of any game I've ever seen. It's kind of inspiring. Like they're talking about how long each cutscene takes, and like they've made spreadsheets of each one to figure out which language is the fastest, and they're putting like hours and hours into this shit for a game that like nobody even knows about and is actually really awful in practice. Like the game itself is bad and they acknowledge this, but it's like they get so into the idea of mastering this system that like that takes precedent over how shitty the game is, which I think is respect. I respect that a lot.
I also really like the Breath of the Wild. I'm really excited to watch more Breath of the Wild runs, obviously, as more people like get really into the game. But it's just so fun to watch people like chop down a tree and then like stasis it and then just hit it a million times and they like climb on it. And then it just like the tree just shoots out and like across the entire, it's insane. And it's so funny to watch every time. Like it cracks me up. Like it's amazing, like the weird shit that people have figured out to do in that game to like quick and travel basically, or like when they mess up too, like this one time he was like trying to shoot this block at him as he was like, basically he was just, there's metal block and then it was nighttime so enemies were spawning and he was like, I didn't plan for this, so he's like trying to take out the enemies first and then he just like stasis the block and they just kept trying to launch himself forward but he just kept messing up. I'll just run there. And then he ended up running there in like a minute. And I was like, why didn't he just do it in the first place? Like, he spent like 10 minutes trying to launch himself. And then it took him like a minute to run there. I was like, okay, I don't get it. But
save up to 15 seconds, man. That's
exactly what was probably his train of thought. And I was like, I feel like if you fuck up the first time, you should just run.
I also like maybe I don't like this, but I think it's interesting the extent to which the boundaries of the run or the... I guess the criteria for the run, the rubric for what qualifies as a specific run, that is super fascinating to me because, Kyle,
Sorry, I was laughing because Josh has passed us both this video from this last speed run where it's the Mirror's Edge speed run.
Oh my God. I got to post this on the Twitter or something at some point.
It's a great example of like the parameters of the run, because a lot of these speed runs that people do, it's like it almost feels like they reverse engineer the parameters of the run based on how they've found the run to work. So it's not like someone says like, I want to do this with half a foot or something, and then they have to figure out how to do it half a foot. It's like they figure out a way to do the run quickly and then build a category around that sort of run. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the runs that are like more like, I guess you call them mature, have more solidified like parameters because people recognize that inside of the scope of a single run, like certain things matter and certain things don't. But some of these ones, like this Mirror's Edge run, are like these people are total assholes.
The guy who was doing the run called it glitchless, but throughout the run, he does multiple things that he explicitly says are glitches. And then there's this dude in the background sitting on the couch, like,
doesn't that like defeat the purpose of the run? If
isn't that a glitch?
He's like, the entire time he's sitting there, he's like,
no.
It's jump cutting to like 10 minutes later, and he's like, "That's a glitch. That's a glitch." He's just sitting in the background, just fucking making these comments. It's hilarious, but no, that's a good example of it. But also, you know what happens is you get these games where they get it to a point where, okay, we can beat this game in 5 minutes easily because we've figured out the system so well that we can break it and beat the game in 5 minutes. So it's like, well, that's no fun anymore. So what? The speedrunning community around this game is just dead now. So what they do is they come up with different criteria. So, okay, we're going to do an all bosses 100% run or whatever. Or, you know, sometimes the 100% run would take way too long to do on AGDQ or something like that. So they change the criteria based on, you know, what's going to exhibit the mechanics of the game best in a way that's like most pleasurable to viewers. That's not going to take too much of your time. So like the Spelunky one that I saw was, it was all shortcuts. So you had to give the stuff to the dude who digs the hole to the next level for you. You know what I'm talking about? Like between levels, like between the forest and the mines, there's like a dude who will dig a tunnel and then you could skip back. So they had to get all of those, fulfill all those criteria and then beat Olmec. So watching that one was a trip because that's apparently the most, I guess, consistent of the runs and like most, it shows off a lot of skill. But apparently like when people start running Spelunky, they'll start a run and they don't know what it's going to be. Like if you have a first level where you're not getting any resources, they'll do like a low resource run. Or if you get like a lot of resources, you'll try to go for like a 100% run or something like that. And I just find that to be a really interesting aspect of it because for some games, it totally changes the game where like for something like Spelunky, which is procedurally generated, you're actually creating the run on the fly. Which is like totally...
Yeah, that seems way more interesting. Really cool.
Yeah. That's just one thing that I like about AGDQ. I mean, it's just also just such a trip to see these people who are so good at something so specific, you know? Like the Super Monkey Ball runners or like the fucking...
Yeah, it's always my favorite.
God, I love Super Monkey Ball. Where's the new Super Monkey Ball? I would love a new Super Monkey Ball for Switch.
Mm-hmm. I'm terrible at Super Monkey Ball, but there have been so many times where I just get caught up on like a YouTube... like playlist of just old speedruns of Super Monkey Ball games, and they're just like entrancing. I don't know what it is about him. It's just like that dude just flung that ball so far, like it's crazy.
What game would you guys speedrun? What community would you become involved with if you were to do it?
I'm gonna do my answer is more of a practical one because when I was younger, I had a PS2, but I only had like one game for it, and that game is Kingdom Hearts. So literally all I would do was play Kingdom Hearts for like years. Like I kept a journal of like where I would map out like items and stuff. Like I knew how to like the fastest way to grind for like the ultimate keyblade, which is like the main keyblade you could craft at like, I don't know. It's like all this crazy, crazy stuff. So I would like, I was really good at Kingdom Hearts and because it was the only game I had for so long. And it was just the type of game that I could one play really quickly, but also like when I 100%ed it and beat Sephiroth and like all the other like secret bosses and whatnot, it felt like really good. So I feel like if I took that seriously, I could probably get into speedrunning because I already have so much of that game in like my head just from playing it so much as a kid. Yeah. But also, yeah. And when I was in high school, I did a charity marathon for high school because we had to do like a charity thing and we're like, well, let's just do a game stream. This is before Twitch was a thing, so I was like, me and a few friends, and end up getting shut down because like people started raiding the chat and being really evil and mean because we're girls. But yeah, I played all of Kingdom Hearts I think in like within 10 hours or something crazy. Maybe it's a little more. That sounds like not a lot of time.
The God.
It's probably a little more. But I didn't sleep, so I was, like, literally up all night playing Kingdom Hearts, like, the first one straight, and then I was like, okay, I'm gonna take a 2-hour nap, and you guys can start off Kingdom Hearts 2, and then I guess I'll get back to that. And then I remember waking up, and they were still in the tutorial, and I was, like, pissed off. I was like, how are you guys still not past this?
You're like, come on.
Yeah.
Freaking amateurs.
Which, I wasn't as, like, I wasn't as much of an expert on Kingdom Hearts 2 when I was younger, because I definitely did not get that game until, like, a while after its release. But the first one, for sure, if I were to get in any speedrunning community, man, first Kingdom Hearts, I could fucking shred it if I took it seriously, probably.
Should do it.
I feel like I can't think of, like, true. I can't think of games that I would, like, want 100%. But like, I can think of like games that would be fun to learn to break. And I definitely defer back to like N64 era stuff. Like, I would love to, I don't know if I would love this, but like getting good at like a Donkey Kong 64 or like Banjo-Tooie speedrun could be really fun.
Yeah.
Because there's like a lot of just like, I remember playing Donkey Kong 64 and even as a kid feeling like there was like some broken stuff about that game where it's just like, it's so big. And like, I remember like getting the Prima Strategy guide and it was like the Bible. It was like so fat. And I was like, there's no way this game is like being held together. So I think like doing something like that where like you're really breaking it versus like just 100%ing it could be really fun, I think.
God hand for me.
God hand.
That's a good one.
That would be dope, dude. That's a sick
That's just game. It would
what
be
is
dope.
A God hand speed run?
Actually, Shinobi would be sick too, because I fucking
Shinobi
love Shinobi for the PS2. I actually want to join the Shinobi speedrunning community now.
So there's a game I've been playing. So this podcast will be going up Thursday and Barbara's at Wednesday. So technically I can't talk about this, but we're not really going to talk about it until everyone else has gotten a chance to play it. But I've been playing Celeste, which is a new game from the Towerfall people. And that game has a speedrun timer on it, which is really cool. And I wish more games just had that in their menu. Like in their menu, you could just turn, do you want to turn on the speedrunning timer? Like you could just turn it on. And it also keeps track of like how fast you complete levels, which is cool. Cause like I went back to like an early chapter and like my first time through took about an hour, second time through 15 minutes because I was like, I already knew everything and it felt very accomplished. But I like when games integrate, basically like encourage speedrunning and encourage you to get good at the game. Like I think that's really cool and I wish more like, not just platformers, but like other games also encourage that type of stuff. Cause I think speedrunning is a lot bigger than I think people give it credit for. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that game especially, I think, kind of baits speedrunning through its, like,
totally.
Its mechanics and style. It's, like, it's totally just begging to be speedrun.
100%. Like, and there's just, like, so much secret stuff, and it's, like, there's gonna be... I'm really excited to see that game out and people get really fucking good at it, because I feel like it'll be a really fun game to watch people speedrun, whether they're doing, like, crazy, like, oh, I'm collecting all the strawberries, which is the little collectible things you can get in each level, or I'm just like trying to reach the peak of the mountain. Like there's all sorts of like criteria that can be spread out. And there's like end game stuff too. I don't know. That game's really rad. We will talk about it more at a later date when everyone else plays.
I kind of honestly feel like speedrunning is like, when I was a kid, I would have never thought that people speedrun games. But like I kind of imagine that those kinds of communities where people like try to beat the game as fast as possible had to exist in some way, shape, or form. But this is almost, it has like a mythical aspect to it, man. Like when you see these people in person, it's like, oh wow, like they're actually fucking human beings. And it's also really funny for me to see these people on a couch and like the kinds of people that speed run like Metal Gear Solid versus the kinds of people that speed run Bloodborne, you know? It's like they have their own little like quirks and weird things. Like I was thinking about this, like who speedruns Tomba 2? Like who speedruns fucking
someone with a goatee.
It's so
obviously.
Crazy, man. Like I have a lot of respect for these people.
I was watching the Toy Story speedrun, which is really fun. No, trust me, this is like a really fun speedrun. But it was just like literally this dude had the biggest posse I've ever seen for a speedrun. Like usually you see like two or three people on the couch, maybe just one. This dude had like seven people on the couch, and this must have been like a late night stream or something, because I was watching just the YouTube archive and they were just like so enthusiastic about this Toy Story game. I think the speedrun's like maybe 30 minutes or maybe probably less actually, but there's a part where you're in Sid's room and you're like Woody, because you play as Woody in that game. And there's a part where like Sid will like lean down with a magnifying glass and like Woody can't do anything. He just like stays still because he's a toy. And the speedrunning team would also just put their heads down and act like a toy whenever the magnifying glass. I was like, this is so good. And then when Sid like moves away, like Woody goes like, ah, and starts waving his hands and running around because he's burning. And it's like they all did that too. It's really good.
What the hell? Like, I want to see this.
I don't get why like games publications don't like go to this event and like report on it. It's always they've always like do it from like it's like armchair general style where they like.
I mean, there have been a few
watch
like
the streams, but like it seems like this is a huge thing. Like every year this happens, and it just gets bigger, and it's like.
I mean, I've always wanted to do that. At my publication, I guess a couple years we had someone there to report from there, but Yeah, I don't know. I'd love to go to Awesome Games Done Quick. Like, I've been kind of like, I don't know when they're hitting an anniversary. I feel like an anniversary would be like the time for me to go and be like, yo,
let's apply for Bad End press passes.
Let's do a live Bad End
cover,
speed run
yeah,
podcast.
Yeah,
while, podcast while speed running Kingdom Hearts.
Learn how to speed run.
Because we could leverage the audio medium and we can just do some like clutch, like last, like how'd that run go, man?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hit him with that.
Mm-hmm. Like a sports reporter.
Like
after
a sports
a game.
Reporter. Yeah.
I always feel bad. Like whenever I watch a basketball game, there's always that reporter there like, that dude just wants to sleep. Like, he just wants to take a nap. And you're like, how'd you do that? And the guy's like, Albert, well, you know, we're coming up and we won. Like, it's just like, you could tell they want to, like, keel over and die. And they have to just fucking, like, pedal yeah. themselves out on, like, press conferences after. I'm like, that sucks. This poor guy.
One,
let,
it's also, it's
let
the best
Steph
time.
Curry sleep.
It's the best time because that's when, like, athletes show their true form and just give you, they just speak solely in sports analogies, which are some of my favorite modes of speaking.
Yeah, totally.
Where like if you go to a wedding and there's like a dad and he's like, you know, my son, he used to kick the ball and he kicked this one real far to the goal.
Is that what your dad said at your wedding?
No, but I feel like there's like, it's like totally a type of person. Like they like interview the coach after a sports game and he's like, you know, sometimes you get the ball on the catch, and sometimes you whiff.
You air.
Not everything's a slam dunk.
Not everything's a... Yeah, exactly. It's this kind of person that for everything in life, there is a sports analogy to be made.
I love the person at the AGDQ who's like, they got into speedrunning because they're like super competitive and like want to get the best time. So it's just like an esports dude. Like, just randomly with all these, like, fucking Midwest nerds who are just, like, unshaved and shit. And this dude's there with, like, a fucking Rucka hat and, like,
a fucking... He's carrying a Monster Energy
he's
drink.
He's carrying a Monster Energy drink. He's like, I just want to be the best in the world. A fucking... this Super Mario mod type shit.
I think that's... What I like about speedrunning is, for the most part, people aren't competitive about it. Like, they're always, like, giving shouts out to other speedrunners on the same game and community. And it really feels like
yeah,
this, like, wholesome community that they all just, like, really
let's
love this
game. Let's break the
game and
together.
Yeah. And I like that aspect of it. It's not, like, super competitive or, like, mean-spirited. It's just very chill. Except for that Mirror's Edge run, which is just excellent.
It's like zero chill.
Yeah, zero chill. Or there's that other speedrun of,
fight.
Like...
It's a fight for the soul of speedrunning.
There's this one speedrun where this... I don't even remember what game it was, but this guy on the couch is just, like, doing this live commentary and making all these really bad jokes, and you can tell the speedrunner is getting really pissed off and just keeps telling him to shut up.
Like, oh, that's a
Tomba
2 one.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Oh, my
Tomba
God.
Excellent.
And he's like,
yeah.
I really appreciate it if you'd be quiet about it by now.
Yeah, it's
and then
like
the
so
guy
polite.
Is just like, the guy
and
is
just like, no.
He just goes silent for fucking, he's got the deer in the headlights look for like 3 minutes.
And then he just makes another joke. It's like, oh man, that's a good speed.
No.
There's so many, I don't think the speedrun had any like moments like that, no. Which is like kind of a bummer.
Well,
but I feel like every Awesome Games Done Quick has like one that's like super
just, like,
awkward
some bad
to watch.
Cringe.
Yeah,
just
it's like, ooh.
They get
the Toy Story 1 was just very like, fun. That was probably my highlight.
AGDQ.
Yeah.
It's also like such a, it's a type of thing because it's like Josh was saying, the mastery that's involved with like doing a speed run in general just requires so much dedicated time and effort that it like, it attracts like a certain type of person that has a certain amount of time in their life, which is often like people who like video games, like a specific type of like console video game, just like young men that like have a lot of time, which is like young men. So you get like all these like, these characters that are like all kind of the same age and they like all been doing the same thing and they have like all have a lot of the similar references. And it's like this, it's weird that it's broadcast so widely for being such like a niche crowd of people when it, like, I can't think of anything else that's very similar where you've got like highly, highly specialized in a weird, like esoteric field being broadcast to like hundreds of thousands of people.
Well, one thing that I kind of like about it is that it's like, it's parallel to esports, right? Which is like, it's like you have these similar like dudes cooped up in their rooms who are really good at this thing. And similarly to esports, it's like there's like this fight for the definition of like what makes a good esport, which is
right.
Trying to figure out what those lines are and what makes for a good esport and trying to define that stuff and draw these boundaries
is super fascinating to me and also hilarious because so many different people have so many different ideas for what makes something fun to watch or makes something more skill-based. And that's something that we see a lot in AGDQ and esports. So I love watching it in that respect too. People who are just mechanically good at something that is just so fucking random, dude.
It is also so weird because so you have like the broism of like the rise of esports, then you've got like the undercurrent of like, I can't even think of what the parallel is to like, I don't know, it's like mathletes and like jocks or something, like nerds and jocks. It's like it's the same dichotomy
within
just like existing
video games. Yeah, I was watching the Hearthstone Championships last weekend, and that has like another just totally different crew of people. Most of them are pretty like awkward looking dudes. And it's just like different from what you would see of like even a League of Legends, which is much more they're used to being around other dudes. I think when they start they can be a little bit awkward, but eventually they get used to being in like the spotlight. And a lot of those dudes in League of Legends have become like adults,
superstars
who
almost
are like used to talking to the media and stuff like that, and they'll give like a really good post stuff. They'll have like a really good post-game interview and stuff, and that's not something you're going to see in AGDQ ever. AGDQ is like the Olympics. Like, you only care about this shit when it's on, you know?
Yeah.
And no one's like, have you tried? Yeah. Have you like tried to like get into speedrunning on the off season?
It's not the same, dude. It's not the
same.
It's
depressing and weird. Like, you try to go into forums and you're like, this is impenetrable. And also, like, it's not the thing about speedrunning is that it's not like an incredibly active community. Like, there's some games that have huge communities, but like, you go to like the speed run, like Speed Demos Archive, and like, there's not a lot of people talking on the forums. Like, it's pretty quiet for the most part. It just springs up around like the big
events. Well, it's Discord now, baby. It's on the Discord now.
That's true.
Very
I feel that.
You
got to
join
that,
one
that.
Of these Discords. And
I'm gonna get on the speedrunning Discord and just start peeping.
I want to get in on a speedrunning Discord and maybe just like hang out, you know, not even learn the game. Just be like, hey, I'm just here to chill. What's up? What it do? Fucking God hand
like,
speedrun community.
I think there's. I think it's
the
it's like a
God
weird
hand.
Thing. It's gonna be big. Like, it's gonna be bigger, I think, than AGDQ. And I think that nobody's like really poised. Like, nobody talks about. Like, effectively talks about at a high level about like the speedrunning culture and the speedrunning community in the same way that like even the paltry coverage that esports gets is like much, much, much more than the speedrunning community gets. And I feel like as speedrunning becomes inevitably more mainstream, there's going to be a whole wave of like that sort of thing. But for now, it's just kind of still in its like nascent baby stages. So it's exciting, but I wish more people talked about it.
Yeah. I like that they can go through like literally the entire, they're like, yeah, the God Hand community is great. You got me, Cheesy Taco 97, Guacamole Burger 8766, Super Light Beams 45. And it's a great community. It's like five people that they list
it's
off
like,
and
like
that's the entire community.
It's like a Skype call.
It's like
call.
A friend group, yeah.
It's a fucking.
That's like one of the many like PUBG Discord servers I'm part of where it's like three people that we just like, it's like, I guess I'll just never delete the server. It's just always in my tab.
Yeah. I'm fucking schmoozed out. Are you guys, what are you
guys have? We gotta talk about Red Dead.
We gotta get back to the
we gotta take a
review,
break and then we gotta talk
this
about
is
Red
super
Dead.
Super exciting. I'm like so stoked for this, you guys. All right. We'll be right back in just a sec with the Red Dead Redemption Part 2, baby. Be right back. So the other day I get home, I already told you the story, but I find in my mailbox a copy of Rockstar Games' Red Dead Redemption 2. You could bet your ass, Red Dead Redemption 2, one of my favorite games of the past decade. You guys would have to say one of the finest games of the past decade.
Oh, dude, I love Red Dead Redemption 1.
It's like Witcher 3, Red Dead Redemption 1. I don't even know what my other picks would be, but these are like S-tier video games. So, you know, I slipped that thing S-tier? Right in the crack
of my PS4 and I immediately started playing it. And so I want to go down the list here one by one and just talk about what we think of each aspect of this game. So first, hype. What were you guys feeling coming into this game? What was your hype level coming into RDR Part 2?
I got to say, like, I was like a big fan and like major advocate of Red Dead 1. I'm going to say my hype was a little low. Mainly because...
Really?
Well, because like the thing was like, I respect they're doing a second one, but I also liked the idea that Red Dead was like a singular entry and like a Rockstar thing. It was just like, here's this one-off Western game, and it was like fun, and I played it to completion, and I was like, I'm good with that story. I enjoyed what it was. However, after seeing like the first few trailers, my hype started going up. So when you called me up and you're like, dude, guess what came in my mailbox today? I was like, I'm willing to give this a chance to play this game so early. So yeah. My hype was low. And
I honestly
got
didn't believe it. My surprise was like through the roof. Like I was like, I've seen maybe 2 minutes of this game in total and you have it in its entirety. That's crazy.
What was your score for the first Red Dead, Katie?
I think the first Red Dead's really fun. You know, it's a good video game. I also like the only thing I really remember about it is the soundtrack. Like the soundtrack's really great. Like there's moment where you're like returning home and like that one like
classic
song.
Gaming moment.
It's like, honestly
going into
like
Mexico.
That,
amazing.
Yeah, like there. I think Mexico's a low point at that game. But anyway,
racist.
When you're like, oh my God.
Oh, just one of the racist parts of that game.
So you're like going home. You're going to get, you're reuniting with your wife after like whole time away from her and your son. And it's like this very like solemn ride on horseback back to your old farm. And like this music's like swelling. And it's just like this really classic like, country song, and it's like has like a grovelly voice and everything. I don't remember like the guy that sings this name, but that moment is like one of my all-time favorite gaming moments, like to be
is
real.
Tom Waits, yeah.
No, it's not Tom Waits. It's like some I don't, it's whoever scored that game. Like that, all the music
remember,
in the game
dude.
Is great. It's
oh,
like
Ennio. Ennio Morricone, yeah.
But man,
scored
that
Red
seems
Dead?
Great.
It's like what? True?
Okay. Maybe I'm misremembering, but it seemed like that to me when I was playing it, because this is such a classic game. And
I gotta say, I love Red Dead, but like the one thing I really remember from it is Bonnie just being like, Mr. Marston? Oh,
yeah,
Mr.
God,
Marston?
I hate Barney.
Mr.
Marston? Barney.
It was like, I remember that.
I remember
driving all my cattle off of a cliff. And
okay, so you guys are already biased going into this. You guys
no,
already.
No. I'm like, I'm a fan.
I think that game's fun.
There's like
I
some
really
bullshit
like Undead
game,
Nightmare.
But, like, it's
Undead
good.
Nightmare is really fun. Mm-hmm. The DLC, the Halloween
okay.
DLC.
That had a box
I love
release.
Finding Sasquatch.
Boxed release
so,
DLC.
I'm already predisposed to not taking your opinion as seriously because you've come out as being not biggest fans of the first one. Whereas I, Joshua Calixto, 10 out of 10, Red Dead Redemption, one of the best games of all time, Calixto. I am more ready to
more ready
rate this thing
redemption.
Fairly. So, Ready Daddy Redemption 2E to give this a fair rating. So, let's start out. Let's go to the first part. Plot. Story.
Wait,
the
can
most
I just,
important, in some people's books, the most important. Yeah, Kyle.
I got to get this out of the way. So, you guys don't know this, but the craziest fucking conceit in Red Dead Redemption 2, I'm going to spoil this real fast, is that
oh, you're gonna spoil this already, huh?
I'm gonna bring this out. Okay, so you don't get this in the trailers, but in this game, you play both as Marston, undead, and him as a child. So it's like it's kind of like a fable type thing where you play like before Red Dead when he was younger, but also as an undead soul, like walking across the West. So they kind of do some of that like GTA 5 like zoom out stuff, but it's not only like the present, you go in the future or the past.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think about that?
I thought it was really interesting because the press materials, right, they said you're going to be playing as Adam Morgan, And that's what
they don't tell you. I know.
That's what we had heard going in. And when it came up with Adam Morgan, it was a very Raiden type thing, like the Metal Gear Solid 2 bait and switch, mm-hmm. where they're showing you this character, and then, you know, you get to this very pivotal scene. I don't want to spoil
it
for you guys.
Don't spoil that scene. That's like,
but
that's a great
the
scene.
The screen zooms out, and you're all of a sudden in the grave. And you're breaking out, and you're John Marston. You got a shoddy, and you're just
that's why when Katie was like, "I liked Undead Nightmare," I was like, "Yeah, I know." They definitely thought that
and
too, and
they
just made it part of the game.
They delivered, and I like that they didn't overdo it with the zombie sequences. They were like, you know what? If we do too much undead John Marston, it'll be too much.
There was that weird romance scene though. So
don't. All right, we're getting a little too.
I don't
want to
spoil
here.
It, but like, there's some weird zombies.
They did a great job of paying homage to the character of John Marston, who we all know and love, who very unfortunately perished at the end of the first game, and to bring him back this way in such a respectful manner, I thought that was really mm-hmm. tasteful on Rockstar's part, mm-hmm. I might call it a Rockstar move.
That would say too.
Yeah, that was a good one.
It's actually it's funny because right when he rises from the dead, it's like a late title screen thing. It just says Rockstar, and you're like, ah, a Rockstar move.
Pan flute comes in, and yeah. It's like, and then it's like Red Dead Redemption 2.
That 2 is like over the letters.
Marston's Revenge.
Marston's back, baby.
That's what I imagined it saying. Of course, it's not the actual title of the game, but. Katie, any moments that stuck out to you in the game?
So I have a point of contention with this game. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's really great. Totally game of the year. Like, 100% it's game
already?
Of the year.
You're going to call it
already?
That?
I'm calling it. But,
all right.
You know, Red Dead Redemption 2, there's a really strange crossover point it hits where it starts leaning into this other Western, The Lone Ranger, which is like an old, old, old Western. It was remade a few years ago.
Yeah,
and this is going
to
be...
Disney owned it now.
Yeah, Disney owns it. It's going to be... So this is going to be like a... I can see this being super controversial when this game's out this spring, eventually, at one point. But we got it early just because we're like very special. But yeah, Johnny Depp's in the game. Like, he is in...
They like did the whole like Rockstar animation. They like scanned him. They like scanned him.
He looks like a character from LA Noir. Like, he looks... His face looks that good. Like, you know, if you lean in close, like, you can tell.
It's
kind of
like a Heavy Rain. Heavy Rain type thing.
The tech came a long way since then. And, you know, I'm really glad you brought this up, Katie, because it brings up a very important conversation with Red Dead. And with all these types of games, Rockstar, they're always very controversial. We know about all this stuff, and we got to spend a couple minutes talking about this part of the game, which is, it's a little bit problematic, right?
Mm-hmm. And Johnny Depp in general, he's a problematic guy. He is an abusive guy. So it was really, I feel like they must have had this in the books before
before
happened,
like,
you know?
Yeah.
The way they get around this is, you know, they don't make him look like his character from Lone Ranger. They put him in like a different light. But this is like a very Sam Houser, Dan Houser, whatever those guys, the dude mm-hmm. who make Rockstar Games' names are. It's very much of one of their moves. You know, they're always going for what's going to be edgy, what's going to get the crowd going. And here, I personally thought everyone else's opinion may differ. I know I'm going to get all the asshole gamers on my ass about this, but I think they took it too far this time. And I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but Rockstar with Red Dead Redemption 2, it was not tastefully executed. I think it could have been tasteful, but they just took it too far. And that's, you know, that's the only thing that I have docked in my book. Everything else in my book has been tight, except for the problematic aspect of the game.
I feel like especially like just Westerns in general, like have a lot, like the idea of a Western itself is like super problematic. So it's hard, especially in this cultural moment that we're living in, to like make a Western. Like, I remember in Red Dead 1, and they brought it back in this one, you could like tie people to like horses and stuff and just let them get dragged. And like in this game, you can tie whatever you want to whatever you want to. Mm-hmm. So like you could tie like a person to a horse, and you can tie a person to that person, and then you could actually, and like, you can like go through a town and like just tie up You can like string the whole town on strings attached to a single horse. And then you can like tell it to go and you can just take the whole town out.
I was reading a really interesting interview that they were saying they were actually most influenced by a few games. One of them was Just Cause 2.
Yeah, yeah, that's super visible.
One of them was Zelda, Breath of the Wild, and the other was Katamari Damacy, and they really wanted to replicate the...
I'm sorry, Katamari what?
Damacy. Damacy.
Damacy.
Damacy.
Katamari Namaste.
Katamari Damacy.
But yeah, it totally comes through like this, like, so it's weird, and it's like, it's weird because like, it's kind of also an homage to like the Human Centipede, so like, there's like all this other weird like, collect, and like, that's how you collect stuff too, like, I think that was dumb. Oh, no, I think it makes sense because, like, I think a lot of Rockstar games, they got tired of, like, people having inventories and making it seem unreal. So they were like, oh, well, you can just have a chest and attach it to your horse. And that's, like, how you carry stuff around. But then, like, they just started doing it. So you can just, everything can be connected. You can start making circuits, like in Minecraft, with, like, redstone, but it's, like, sandstone. So you can kind of give towns electricity, like Fallout. Well, it's crazy.
I wanted to bring that part up because we talked about that aspect of it. But the other thing that's really big in RDR2 is the crafting component, which was in as much in the first one. The survival aspect is something that's going to catch a lot of other critics off their feet. How are you guys feeling about the crafting components in RDR2?
I hate crafting in every single game.
Mm.
So it was definitely a big minus for me.
I knew you were gonna say that.
It's too much crafting.
I think they leaned into the survival in a good way, and I think that it's like you can really tell it's survival because like I think people they knew like a lot of people complained about skinning animals in the first game and how it took like 15 seconds or something.
Too long.
I think it in the game, so in Red Dead 1 it was de-emphasized, so like how long it took seemed weird. But in this game, it makes sense that they tripled the animation time. So every time you skin an animal, it takes like a minute just to get the pelt. So it feels more realistic. So
it's more organic.
It is strange. It takes like a minute to skin a whole animal.
When I boot up Red Dead Redemption 2, I don't want like a Western simulator. I just want some fun, stupid open world where I can like tie people to trains and shit.
That's not what you're getting though. You gotta get it's like a full
on. I don't want
like,
a simulation. Like I'm sorry. I just don't
love
want a
that
simulation.
I love that it's a living, breathing world until you strangle it, wring its neck, and then cook it over an open stove in the middle of the desert, while also trying to ensure your own survival. It's just very organic feeling game, and the hunting aspect, the crafting aspect, the starvation risk that you always face
like,
throughout the entire game.
Is it so like I've never played Metal Gear Solid 3, but I've heard Metal Gear Solid 3 has like similar survival stuff. Like would you guys like stack those up as being like Red Dead Redemption 2?
I think Red Dead's more of a survival game. Red Dead's more like kind of like Rust or something. There's like it's like a big survival portion.
Okay, so it's
I didn't interpret it that way, but I could see where you're coming from with that. I respect that opinion. To me, it was a lot more organically implemented.
Mm-hmm. How many more times are you going to say organic?
It's just the game was very organic.
It's actually the weirdest part is that we got the game and Josh showed me the cover and it says certified organic on the cover. It's like sustainably
it's
made. Triple like they were
a
like no developers were harmed in the process of fair making this
trade.
Game through crunch.
Let's talk about the graphics. What'd you guys think about those? How is it running for you guys on the old PS4?
It ran really bad.
Yeah,
oh, really?
There's some like frame rate issues, dude.
It's like a Rockstar thing, you know, like every game is always that Rockstar jank.
Mm-hmm. Once you get 800 bodies intertwined on screen with one rope, it starts to
It does really choke up.
And that was a little bit rough about the game. And you know, I feel like, you know, in the future, they're going to probably patch this. But honestly, from a studio like Rockstar, unacceptable. Everything else about the game is great except for this.
It feels a little rushed, if you don't mind me saying. You know, yeah. It feels like they kind of like, I don't know, maybe we got an early copy. Like, I admit that could be a thing, but like, it felt like there's like a lot of work to be done. Like, the train sequence kind of like bugged out, and like one of the trains, one of the cars, when I was playing it, just like disappeared. You've also got this weird thing where like the horse thing from the first game is still in, where like there's horses just running like inside the ground. Also had like disappearing faces. Like, the rope physics didn't work out, like you said, when you started strangling like a lot of stuff together. So there's just like, I don't know, it's just kind of sloppy, but
the clipping stuff has some issues.
The clipping, yeah. I would have like in the pop-in too, like so bad, like because you have the big canyons. You'll be standing
Mary
at the
Poppins
top and you'll
up
look
in
down.
This bitch, dude.
This is full on Mary Poppins.
Mary Poppins.
I want to talk about another thing though. We talked about it earlier, kind of, but there's a kind of controversial add to this game. Do you guys want to talk about the speedrun timer?
Yeah.
Yeah, what?
Let's talk about it. Also, I feel like this game's too short. It's like maybe 100 hours, and it should be like 300 or more.
It took you 100 hours. It took you 100 hours?
Yeah.
Oh, it only took me like 30.
I had to tie everyone.
Katie was doing the 100% speed run.
I had to build the Ultima horse.
She had to juggle 100 mushrooms at a time.
Yeah, I had to like chop down a tree and put in
the Ultima horse. Oh god, the speedrun timer though. I wanted to talk about this.
It's weird because it's usually if there's a game with a speedrun timer in it, it implies like you're supposed to do it fast. But like Katie said, like there's only like 100 hours or so content. So like you could do it pretty quickly. But I feel like there should be more. Like if they're gonna put a speedrun timer in, it makes me feel like it should be a challenge to like do it faster. But I don't know. It seems weird that it's in there. I wish you could toggle it off. It kinda like fades away if you're standing still, so you can like take cool screenshots. But like when you're running around, it's like it's still up there.
Also, the HUD's like really wild. There's just like so much shit
on
the screen.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. It like I felt like I was playing like Xenoblade Chronicles 2 sometimes. Like it was just like there's just so much like
Horizon Zero Dawn too.
Like they're like okay, so there what were we talking about earlier? So there's no inventory in the game, right?
Right.
And they really make up for that with like the chests you could put on your horse. Fair enough, you could tie multiple chests, so it's like there's like 50 chests like hanging off your horse. It looks really silly, but also you don't have to worry about going through menus. You just like reach in and you grab whatever shit you need, and the game just knows what you need. You don't even have to like think about it. It's just like, oh
yeah, it's
like
it's like adaptive.
You need
inventory.
A chocolate bar. Here you go. And
it's contextual, is what
it's
they
contextual.
Called it.
Yeah,
and CI then, contextual inventory.
But also, it's, like, all over your screen, and there's no way to turn it off. Your HUD is just, like, a fucking mess. It's, like, you literally have, like, maybe, like a 128 by 128, like, square in the center. And it's just, like, shit all around that. It's, like, a very
it's like
fancy
a, it's like
frame
a modern
from, like,
World of Warcraft game or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
like,
it's
Final
really
Fantasy
stupid.
13 damage numbers. Whenever you shoot a horse, like, 30 numbers pop up on the screen.
Or Assassin's Creed Origins has that, too. You could turn that off, at least, though. You can't turn it off here.
Hmm. Well, to wrap up, I wanted to say at a high level, this is one of the best games of the past decade. It's an absolute masterpiece on Rockstar's part. They've done it again. And I have a few problems with it, one of which Polygon had a great article. Waypoint had a great article on it. Kotaku had a great article on it. All of the big pubs had great articles on this problematic aspect on the game. I really hope you guys will read those articles because they're really good. Did a great job of explaining what's problematic about it. And I totally agree with all they had to say. That stuff and the frame rate issues with some of the texture pop-in, it's given me some trepidation to give this as high a score as the first one. I would say right now, Red Dead Redemption 2, it's a flawed masterpiece. Gotta play.
Agree.
It's definitely gonna be in the top five of the year, but flawed masterpiece.
Don't at me, but like it's flawed, you know?
Flawed
but it's still
masterpiece.
A masterpiece. It's like it's Rockstar did it again, really. When it comes down
organic,
to it.
Organic. Such a great organic experience.
the horses, just when you look them in the eye and you see a soul there.
They glisten.
They glisten. The story, with all of the perspective jumps, the inclusion that it was able to achieve, the
also super diverse, you know, it's super still diverse. Super diverse.
Super diverse, slightly problematic, but just everything about this game is so great. And I'm just, kudos to Rockstar for creating such a great masterpiece that is also flawed. That's what I have to say. That's my ending note. It's a 9.8 out of 10 for me.
Yeah.
Flawed masterpiece.
I would say a 9.7. I also like, I want to give a shout out to some of like the really cool NPCs. There's the talking horse. That was cool.
That's also during during the drug trip scene.
Yeah,
because he doesn't
say,
talk.
Like the drug trip. Yeah.
Wait, he doesn't
the peyote
actually talk?
Scene.
No.
Oh, God. Oh, the okay, it was during the peyote scene.
Mm-hmm.
The drug trip scene was cool. I like that undead Marston can talk to snakes.
That was
like a cool, like,
the necromancy perk was a really cool tree to be able to go into, and totally not something I thought they were going to explore in this
also,
game.
Catching up with Sasquatch from Undead Nightmare. That was like a nice treat. Like,
that was really fun. Yeah, that was like a good shout out.
It's like, you know, like, poor Sasquatch, you can shoot him if you want in Undead Nightmare, but you don't have to. Canonically, you can just walk away and leave him alone, and he's like really sad because he's all alone in the forest. He's like, just leave me alone. But it's nice to see, like, now he has a family. He has like a nice cabin.
It's like
in
Fable
woods.
When they were like, you could plant an acorn and in 10 years it will be a tree.
Yeah.
It was like that, but with Red Dead Redemption and Sasquash, he now has a family, his kids in college.
It's
good
so
for
nice.
Him.
Yeah, and his kids are just normal kids. Like, he's just the only Sasquatch. They're like more hairy than you would expect, but like other than that, you know,
it's like
just
a
like
it's
a
really about
ending.
Family. Yeah,
more
I
hairy than you would expect.
That's
I would
a really
expect
it also
Sasquatch's
like,
children to be pretty hairy.
Well, like they're human. Like the mom was a human, so it's like I don't know. In my head, like women has dominant genes.
Mm.
I think it really puts like a mirror to our society. I think a lot, like they really play with the cultural moment. I think in a way that's like it's a little obtuse, but like Josh, it's problematic. Like Josh said, but
that's
like,
a
it also,
great point. Like in the age of Trump, right now, this is the game we needed, in a sense, in some ways,
because it's like bold and assertive, but it also takes a stand.
Yeah, and it's a little bit problematic, but still flawed and masterpiece. In a masterpiece sort of way. Katie, your closing thoughts on RDR2?
I mean, yeah, I think I'm going to agree with Kyle's score of like 9.7 out of 10. It's super flawed.
Not quite a 9.8.
You got to take these two with a grain of salt.
I don't know. Like, it's not quite a 9.8 for me. Like, it's missing that. It's like too problematic a little bit. I think if they didn't have Johnny Depp in it, I would have really connected with the game more. But it's like, when I see it, I'm just like, oh, like, that dude beats women and he's in this video game that I'm otherwise really enjoying. And it was just like, why the Lone Ranger of all the Westerns to do a crossover with? You're choosing the Lone Ranger? Like,
they
could have
chose Rango. I would have loved to see a Rango crossover.
That's true, yeah, actually.
What about Chris
actually,
Pratt?
I actually wouldn't complain about that.
Magnificent Seven.
Ooh.
Yeah.
What about a Django Unchained crossover?
That would be dope.
What was
dude.
The what's
Unfortunately,
the Hateful Eight? Hateful Eight fits that reference more than Django Unchained. That's not even a Western.
The Quentin Tarantino cameo
was
pretty cool.
Yeah, sure. That was a cool moment that just made me wish for like a better cameo in my video game. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Clint Eastwood would have been cool.
Yeah.
Any Clint Eastwood movie. Yeah, there's so many. It's like, I mean, Clint Eastwood kind of sucks as a person. But his old movies, sure. Like any of them. But man, like, it's a great game of the year, but not quite a 9.8 for me.
Yeah. Sorry, Josh.
Well, I just want to give thanks, shout outs to Rockstar for sending us this extremely real game, Red Dead Redemption 2. This is exactly not a fake review that we just did. 100% real. It's fake. It was satire. But
yeah, it's all a joke. I'm just like, I don't want Rockstar like knocking on our email being like, yo, what's up with this? When
but
it's like, this is very obviously
when the
a joke,
game actually
you know.
does, this is great publication from the game actually does drop, later this year, and we'll compare what our review is. Our, like,
yeah, we'll compare like how we feel.
All right.
Can you tie 80 people to a train? Like, who knows? I hope so.
We'll see.
We are Bad End Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Bad End Podcast. We're also on email, Gmail. We are at badendpod@gmail.com. Like us on, follow us on Twitter, retweet our shit, rate us and review us on iTunes. All that stuff is super helpful. And we will see you in a couple weeks.
Later. Bye, gamers. Yes.